Welcome to Idea Factory Giveaway, a guest-guided tour through the junk drawer of my brain. I'm your host, John, and I'm joined by my guest co-host, Kate.
Hello!
Kate, how are you doing? What's going on with you?
Oh, I'm doing super awesome. I sold a story to a magazine called Beneath Ceaseless Skies. It's my first pro-rate story, which doesn't mean anything to anyone outside of, like, science fiction writing world, but it's just kind of a big deal. So I'm very excited.
I would love to learn what pro-rate means if you're not if you're open to explaining it.
Sure. So the pro-rate is established by CIFWA, the Science Fiction Writers of America. It's 6 cents a word, which is pretty good. Some of the top mags in the field pay like 8 cents a word or 10 cents a word, but six is standard for anyone who wants to be considered pro.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Can you give us some idea of what the story is about and when we might see it?
Sure. So the story is called A Marvelous Deal. It is about a misguided little girl who makes a deal with an evil carrot. And it goes poorly for everyone.
Wait, did you write a Twine game that was something? No?
A Twine game about a carrot? No.
I guess I'm trying to, like, I feel like I saw a Twine game from you at one point where you made a deal with somebody. I didn't get super far in it because I'm a trash person, basically.
That's, oh God.
Yeah.
But no, all the Twine games I've written are super bad. So I don't know. I don't know when you would have played those.
I mean, you're talking to a person who wrote a Star Trek-based Twine game where
but that was super fun. That was so fun. I had such a good time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You're too kind. It was based on an adventure that I had written for my Star Trek D&D hybrid thing that I made up. Because I'm a ridiculous person, but I think it works better as a Twine game. Yeah. But yeah, no, thank you.
Oh my God, were you talking about the dating sim?
Maybe. I did read, I did play that the whole way through.
Oh man.
But no, I feel like it's you are confronted, like you're walking along a dock or a road or something.
Oh, this is the Dragon Age fan game.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's the Dragon Age RPG Twine game.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I totally forgot that I let you see that.
It was great. I just, I for some reason, was not in a place where I had the patience to, like, go through all of it.
There's a lot of words in there.
But that's entirely down to my feelings. I'm sure it was great. You do great things, Kate. Come on, let's...
I do some okay things.
You do. You better than okay. Damn it. Awesome. Well, that's great. Congratulations on selling your awesome story.
Thank you.
When can we read it?
Oh, probably this fall.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is this like an online publication?
Yes, it's an online publication.
Okay, brilliant, brilliant. Well, then I'm definitely going to read it, and I can't
wait
to do that.
I'll yell about it on Twitter, like,
yes,
every day for
yes.
several weeks.
Excellent. Excellent. For my part, I've just been trying to find new music to listen to. I'm one of those guys who doesn't have Spotify. I don't trust leaving music in the cloud, because if I'm someplace with poor connectivity, then I'm still one of those guys who's seeking out albums to get. And I've been looking for basically like either like some smooth electronic beats.
Ooh.
Or some good like head nodding raps or some mellow guitars. Do you have anything in any of those fields?
How deep in the Khaki King discography have you gotten?
Oh, I think I lost a bunch of my Khaki King on a great hard drive crash.
Dog.
I might have to go recover that.
Back up on that shit. No, you know what? Actually, Laura Veers, Katie Lang,
oh, right.
And
yes.
Nico Case just put out an album together.
Yes, yes, I saw that.
Yeah. It's really good. You should go listen to it.
I listened to it on NPR. I was like, okay, yeah. And then I somehow forgot to follow through on that.
What the fuck, John?
Did I ever tell you about the time Sean and I went to go see Laura Veers at Café du Nord, back
no.
when it was still a music venue,
yeah,
and there were
yeah.
like five people there, and it was bizarre to both, because like Laura Veers is a big deal and she's great.
Yeah, she's fucking awesome.
And for some reason, like, I don't know if word just failed to get out for this show, or if we were, I mean, like, I don't think it was during Burning Man or something, but there were literally like five or ten people at the show. It was nuts. Like, we I mean, that was an amazing show because we were like right up there. It was fascinating.
I love that you have to consider Burning Man as like a thing that could affect the show, because when Burning Man's happening, San Francisco is like a ghost town. Everyone's gone.
It's the best. I love it. I will never go to actual Burning Man because I love its effect on the Bay Area too much.
You can get into any restaurant.
It's the best.
It's so great.
It is time, I think, to introduce our guest. Our guest today is my friend Jen. Jen.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm amazing.
What, for those of us, you may have heard Jen on another episode, but just in case, Jen, what's your deal?
I'm going to tell you different things about myself this time.
Amazing.
One of my random fun facts that I'm looking at this Idea Factory spreadsheet and it made me think of, I once came in last place on Jeopardy.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
What? Yeah.
Yes, you were a contestant on Jeopardy.
Yes, and I lost. It was great.
Do you have any stories you can share with us from that time?
So actually, one of my favorite things about being on Jeopardy was that Alex Trebek actually talks to you. He's not just there as like a host that's only present and on when he's on camera. He's actually just a really cool dude. And in between tapes, like during the commercial break, they have to pause because they actually do local market commercial breaks. So there's a couple of minutes of just dead time where the cameras aren't rolling. And he chats with the contestants and also fields questions from the studio audience. And so, since the episodes tape in the middle of the day on weekdays, the studio audience is a lot of senior citizens who take, like, bus trips into L.A. And so it's always really funny because, you know, Trebek, I think, is about 73 years old. So he's, you know, he's around the same age group as some of these people in the studio audience. And yet, he will endlessly rib them with old people jokes. And he's really great. And he'll be like, so what are you doing next? You're going to go get that early bird special? Dinner at 4? And it's amazing because he's their age. But he's acting like he's just kind of a smug 20-something. So that's my favorite little anecdote from that. It's not about me, but that's, you know.
No, that's incredible. Yeah. That's incredible.
But yeah, so I came in last place on Jeopardy once, and I will always enjoy that, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I forgot completely about that. That is so awesome.
Yeah, so kids, you know, remember your trivia stuff. Sometimes it pays off for the TV appearance that will never, ever go into syndication.
Well, is it time to perhaps dive into the spreadsheet you spoke of?
It sure is.
So the spreadsheet, for those of you who are catching up, is that I have been writing down all of my stray ideas for the past decade or so, and there are hundreds of them. I'm not doing anything with them, and so it's time to release them into the wild. And the way I've chosen to do that is to show them to friends of mine, and then we can just sort of talk them through, because some of them are a little crazier than others. And that's just how we're going to do things. Because hopefully, maybe some of these ideas will be good to someone out there.
Yeah. Okay, so the first one, so the part I didn't really say about myself because I went off on the Jeopardy tangent, is that I have a tech startup. And so one of these items is really interesting to me. Sarcastic Precious Moments figurines for tech people. I would love to hear about that.
So, not that I am, like, in the market for Precious Moments figurines, but I feel like we know at least one person who collects them, right? And they're those, for those of you who don't know, they're these collectible, I think they're ceramics?
Yeah, I think they're porcelain little something.
Collectible ceramic statues of these cloyingly cute children with enormous heads, and the statues sort of, like, commemorate stupid little kind of, like, bucolic moments. And
bucolic, that's a good word.
And but there's like there's probably hundreds of them, if not thousands of them at this point. And so I thought, well, what if somebody made those, but commemorating kind of like those moments that only San Francisco tech bros would understand, like you know, getting in the wrong Uber, or you know, or standing in line for brunch at Plow, God, I don't even know what.
Lying about your stealth startup.
Exactly, Exactly. I think that we could come up with a bunch of them, and we could. I think that they would sell well to a certain class of tech worker who wants to put, you know, wants to put it like on his, like in his cubicle, or like, you know, on
a VC
on his
blocked
desk.
Me on Twitter. That's a good one.
Ooh, yeah. See, I feel like you, especially as technical co-founder of a startup, you would have a ton of these. Yeah. So, you know, we should brainstorm offline and we can come up with a bunch.
I feel like we could come up with a bunch of. I feel like there's actually probably some really good Burning Man centered ones. Actually, there's a commemorative moment. I stayed in the Bay Area during Burning Man, and it's like the precious moment figure enjoying some toast.
I think that we should definitely
This is a series that needs to happen.
I think so.
Okay, so. Trying not to just monopolize the Star Trek categories, we're going Star Trek adjacent. Sir Patrick Stewart drops the motherfucking science. Please tell me what this is.
What that is it's sort of like in the style of Dean News, where it's a host who is explaining a scientific concept, but in this case, it's Patrick Stewart. So you can't not listen to him.
That's true.
And so, like that, you know, I think that there should be, quite frankly, I think that there should be there should be a channel like this where it's nothing but giant celebrities explaining scientific concepts to people.
I think people would be more science literate if that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But for sure the core of it, like Patrick Stewart is kind of like the recurring, he's the regular host, and every once in a while, you know, like there's an episode.
He's his best buddy, Ian McKellen.
Yeah, exactly. Ian McKellen, or, you know, like, yeah, but there's like a sort of a constant trickle of guest stars who are just there, and that I think, I feel like it would be worthwhile. I don't know how we would get that to happen. Just putting that out into the ether.
So I have to ask both of you, what is the scientific concept that each of you would most like to hear Sir Patrick Stewart describe?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good question.
I think I would love to hear Patrick Stewart describe quantum mechanics.
Okay.
It'd be a blast.
I think you'd have to write him a good script for it, but the gravitational wave detection...
Oh yes.
Yeah.
I think that would be cool.
All right.
I think he could work that out for people in a way that would, you know, where they would understand it.
Yeah. Excellent. I would like to hear him talk about string theory.
Oh.
Because that's the one I always hear people, you know, name dropping string theory as like, look at how much I know about science, and I will admit I don't really know what it is. So I want Sir Patrick Stewart to explain it to me.
If we're going to talk about theories that we don't understand, I would love Sir Patrick Stewart to explain M theory to me, because I don't know. I have almost no knowledge.
Isn't that like a Marvel miniseries?
Oh God.
M theory is, I think, it has something to do with like cosmology or the underlying structure of the universe, but it involves, like, I think, multiple dimensions in a way that I can't wrap my mind around. So, yeah.
So it is a Marvel miniseries.
You know what? It cannot be mathematically excluded.
Okay. The next one is actually also a series, and this is one that I really think that you need to bring into production. Please, please tell the audience about Steve and the Spider Teach Cooking.
Okay. Steve and the Spider Teach Cooking is a comedy YouTube series it's a cooking show that is being presented to you by a guy named Steve, but he's also sharing the kitchen with a human-sized spider. Wearing a chef's hat, the spider has all the tools. The spider is basically his sous chef. It does, you know, it does helpful tasks. The problem is that Steve is an arachnophobe. And so, like, he tries not to look at the spider. Every time the spider hands him something, he flinches. He gets visibly sweatier as each episode goes on. He'll definitely show you a recipe, but by the end of it, he might be a nervous fucking wreck.
So here's the question with Steve. I mean, like, what is worse to him? Not being able to finish the recipe in the allotted time? Because I'm presuming that the eight arms on the spider is actually helping him get stuff done way faster than he should. So I mean, is it worse to, you know, say that you can make a souffle in 30 minutes when you really can't without the spider? Or to have to, like, accidentally touch a spider arm?
As a bit of an arachnophobe myself, I don't know. I don't know what would be worse.
Because I like to think that in the context of the series, Steve has like a maximum of half hour to make whatever he's making, and he's really ambitious.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you know what? Like, everyone says that, like, you know, lemon ginger cupcakes take 4 hours to make, but we're going to do it in a half hour. And so, like, he really, like, he's almost reliant on the spider to make that happen.
It's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Whew. But he can't look at the spider. He definitely isn't going to make eye contact with any of its eight creepy eyes. Like, yeah.
Wait, they have eight eyes as well?
Spiders have eight eyes.
Oh. Yeah. I knew they had the eight arms. I did not know about the eyes.
Mm. There's a lot of creepy shit about spiders that I know because I fear them.
I feel the same way about airplanes. I know so much about airplanes, how they work, how they fly, everything that can go wrong in an airplane.
What airplanes have eight of?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man.
But yes, Steve and the Spider teach cooking.
I would watch that show. I think Absolutely. That show needs to be made.
I've thought about it on occasion. The issue that I run into is one of implementation, namely creating... I mean, like, it doesn't actually have to be... And I think it's actually funnier if the spider puppet is kind of janky looking.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Right? Because, like, it definitely needs to be a spider wearing a chef's hat. But like, even a janky looking spider puppet, I feel like,
would be really hard to build. I think, actually, the more low budget it looks like, I think the more effective it is that he's afraid of it. Because you really got to wonder what's going on with Steve. That he's afraid of what's clearly not actually a real spider.
This is just what those giant human-sized spiders look like in Steve's universe, and he's not comfortable.
Nope.
So, wait. Is it human-sized, like it's standing on its legs like a person, and it's human-sized, or is it on all eight legs like a spider?
Oh.
It's just very tall.
Oh.
In my head, it's a guy in a spider suit that actually has eight separate legs aside from the two he's standing on.
Yeah,
he's a ten-legged spider because the two human legs don't count.
What I'm envisioning is a long, like in frame, is like a long counter, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And so, like, Steve is like, Steve's got his half of the counter, but then next to him is basically kind of like the upper half of a sort of like spider thorax and a head, you know, and then like
and then the
crowned by the hat.
Yes.
And then so like whoever's inside the spider puppet has definitely two arms that they're using as but there might be. I don't think you're actually going to see all eight of the spider's legs.
I think if you have eight, then that's how you most effectively get all the recipes made. So the two human legs are really just there for support, and they're not really...
Oh, no. Yeah, no, you don't see anything below the counter, right? So,
but, like, all eight arms are above the counter, so kind of, like,
I think you could get a maximum of six.
You think six?
Yeah.
So it looks like you're standing on two?
Yeah.
So wait, the legs that support the entire weight of your body plus all of the dishes and things you're holding...
Two spindly spider legs.
Two spindly spider legs.
Theoretically, which you would never see.
You can also, those same spindly spider legs that can support, you know, I'm assuming like a 6 foot tall human sized spider, are also delicate enough to like whisk, like without like really like messing up like your hollandaise or something.
I mean, the other way you could go with it, and this would take a lot more expense, would be to create a spider puppet that one half of the counter is Steve. You know, from the waist up, right?
Right.
Like he's, but then the other half of the counter, there's a spider hanging from the ceiling.
See, the hanging actually really frees up all eight of the arms.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like kind of it does make the spider a little bit less tall.
It does. It does. But you would be able to. It would be able to use all eight of its legs. But I don't know how.
Would it be scarier or funnier if it was like a dog-sized spider on the counter? With a little hat and he's just like chopping away.
Oh, man.
With eight legs.
That's mean.
No, one of the things I envision happening a lot is like the spider finishing a task, and there's kind of, like, mutely... Because the spider doesn't talk, right? It just kind of mutely hands him, like, a finished bowl of, you know, chopped peppers or something. Yeah. And Steve will be like, ugh!
Yeah.
And then, you know, so, like, he has to take the bowl from the spider. But it's still, I think it's harder to do if the spider is dog-sized, but that is an equally...
Yeah.
That's a...
I think the spider is most effective at, like, 6 feet tall, especially if Steve is slightly shorter.
Oh, man.
Because then... He really, he's so screwed. Because he's afraid of spiders and it's bigger than him.
Oh no. Oh no, Steve.
Steve has a lot of stuff to sort out in his life.
It's true. It's true.
Yep. So, there's one that you brought up as a product, and I'm really, really curious about it. Because it's... I have to... I mean, like, it actually... It makes a whole lot of sense, but I just need to understand it. Areggsokay.com.
Ah, yes. It's a website. It's a... We live in a society where nobody knows at any given moment whether or not eggs are healthy to eat or not. Sometimes eggs are healthy. Sometimes they're not. Depending on the whims of, I don't know who exactly, some shadowy
nutritionist mafia.
Yeah, there's some kind of nutritionist council or competing lobbyists.
Right.
That you know, conspire to either eggs are great, they're full of the right cholesterol or whatever.
Yeah.
Or eggs are fattening and they're terrible for you. And we just don't know which is the fucking right answer at any given moment.
Yeah.
So what we should do is... There's a website called areggsokay.com that you can just go to and find out whether or not eggs are okay to eat this week or not.
No, okay, here's what... I have a question then.
Yes.
If you bought some eggs on a day when you visited areggsokay.com and it said yes, and then the next day you check back and they're no longer okay, are you legally and ethically obligated to get rid of those eggs?
This is a good question. I think that whatever you do with your eggs in the privacy of your own home... is not within the government's purview.
I mean, like, I guess you could, like, shame eat them and just be like, this is so bad for me. Like, except instead of, like, just eating a whole pizza, you're just eating some raw eggs.
We can agree that raw is the worst way to consume eggs. I guess.
By themselves, yeah. Raw egg on stuff, sometimes really good.
Oh.
Like, there's some, like, I don't know if you ever had, like, you get, like, a bowl of like, hot steamed rice, and you crack... a fresh raw egg onto it, and you stir it up, and you put some sesame seeds and soy sauce in there. It's really good. It kind of cooks a little bit, but not really.
You know,
it's very good.
I will have to take your word for it because I'm just not an egg person.
Okay.
For me, the only way to eat an egg
is... This tracks, though, because eggs are in mayonnaise, and you hate mayonnaise.
I hate mayonnaise so much.
Yeah.
It's the worst. It's the grossest.
Delicious.
But for me, yeah, I can only eat eggs, like, hard scrambled, or you hard boil them and you throw the yolk in the garbage.
Oh, yeah, because, like, once the yolk turns solid, that egg is worthless.
It's disgusting.
Like, I find hard-boiled eggs offensive. Like, they smell bad. They ruin the entire kitchen. Like, you can't get that hard-boiled egg smell away.
But the whites are great. I mean, they're a perfect salt delivery mechanism.
Soft-boiled eggs are good. But they're less portable.
I'll take your word for it.
All right.
We have time, I think, for one more.
This seems like a short one. I want to know about the DS9 trampoline. Like, does it look like DS9?
Yes.
Or, okay.
Yes, it's a trampoline in the shape of the space station DS9 from the show DS9.
Okay, so is it like a bounce house trampoline where you've got kind of the...
No, I think that you basically stretch the membrane of the trampoline inside the docking ring.
Okay.
And, I mean, of course, the trouble there, right, is that then you have the three prongs that kind of project into the trampoline space.
Right, which I'm thinking if it's a bounce house, then those are at least soft, so if you jump too hard and you hit one...
Yeah, it might be the kind of thing where, so the bottom of it is, like, the bottom...
Like, the
arms,
frame is a little sturdier, and,
yeah,
like, the top
and the top
are
just inflatable, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could be a thing. But yeah, I just want to see a trampoline in the shape of Deep Space Nine.
I think more things should be in the shape of Deep Space Nine. So, yeah.
Perfection. Well, we have now reached the part of the show where we make terrible recommendations. Kate, do you have anything?
Just based on personal experience, I have a great, terrible recommendation for you. When you go to San Francisco, don't bring a sweater and don't wear pants.
That is a very strong, terrible recommendation.
I have a hoodie you can borrow on the way back to the
Well, thanks.
Yes. Jen, do you have any terrible recommendations for us?
So I feel like all of my personal terrible recommendations are things that I actually endorse, but they might be terrible for most people. And so one of my favorites, and I wish I could actually take credit for the origin of this idea, but I got it from a friend of mine. So you start with a can of soup, or actually it's really good with like a Chef Boyardee, like a SpaghettiOs or a ravioli.
Okay.
After you finish half of the can, fill the rest up with mayonnaise and kind of swirl it around. Just gonna cry. But it's just, you're so upset by the mayonnaise. But this is sort of like, if you've ever really wanted like your Chef Boyardee or like your Campbell's soup to be like a little bit creamier and fattier, you know, that's a good way to do that.
Oh no. Oh God. You know, I mean, I'm not here to judge. I don't judge you as a person. It's just that sounds horrifying. This has been Idea Factory Giveaway. I'm John. You can find me online at Ferocious J on Twitter. Just the word ferocious, the letter J.
I'm Kate. You can also find me on Twitter. I am at Kate D. That's KEIGHTDEE.
And I am also on Twitter. My username is Jennifer Marie.
Outstanding. This has been Idea Factory Giveaway. Remember, if you use any of these ideas, please feel free to do it. All I need is credit and a cut. Thank you.